Welcome to Metacast number 5. I'm Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
Today's topic is stakeholders and engagement and over-engagement and under-engagement and all flavors of engagement.
How to get them engaged. And engaged is a very flowery word for how do you connect to your stakeholders? How do you, I think by default, the term stakeholder means I care.
You know, I was thinking about that this week.
I have a stake.
Yeah.
Is that an EAK or no, that's an AKE?
It's an AKE, and I was thinking about it because at the Agile Coach Camp, we talked a lot about stakeholders. And I'm like, how does somebody holding a stake make any sense? I tried to figure out what's that, the entomology or something? Or is that insects?
That's insects. I'm not sure what the root of it, the term
what
is.
What the wordology
but
is.
But they have skin in the game. They are a stakeholder.
You mean you can't answer my question?
I cannot answer your question. Answer it yourself. You brought up bugs, for God's sakes. What's that about? I mean, at this time in the morning. This is an early Metacast. It's a 7:10 a.m., so we beg your forgiveness if we sort of get a little punchy this morning.
Oh, don't apologize. We'll be better than ever.
Maybe we will. We wanted to do this every week or every Metacast. So, and we've also changed locales, so we're in beautiful downtown Cary, North Carolina.
Yeah.
And not or the downgrade, but we're changing things up. So back to stakeholders. I don't know if we have to define it, but it's why don't we get back to how do we connect to those guys? At what levels? I think of multiple levels. So why don't we start bouncing around levels, Josh? Because I think of stakeholders as being multidimensional. I mean, the team themselves is a stakeholder, I think, to some degree.
So is it anybody that's outside the team that cares?
That's a nice general.
Is that the only thing you need to be a stakeholder?
I think that's a nice general. Incented, too. I mean, cares, yes. I always think of, you know, the mental model for me is someone whose bonus, you know, my bonus is tied to this project. So by default, I really care, right? Because I have some money on the line, and I joke about it. But that's actually, I think, a strong connector as well, particularly in traditional shops, right, where you have bonuses. Stakeholders, VPs, executive sponsors would be another stakeholder, where usually they have money on the line, which should, you know, logic says it should color their engagement. Sometimes it doesn't, though, influence their positive engagement. So I think anyone who cares, good definition.
Do you think you would care if you didn't have money on the line?
I care if I don't have money on the line. But
that's because you're closely tied to the project.
I care, you know, I care about money, but I'm not money driven. So if I'm leading a project or involved in a project, then that connector for me, I don't know if I call myself a stakeholder, I probably am a stakeholder, but if I'm connected to a project, what motivates me towards it is like you main project success rather than...
So I guess where I was going with that is if you're more than two levels up, right? So it's not a part of your daily activities.
Well, that's where the money starts triggering in, right? It puts it on your radar. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of folks, they have bonus sheets. So you have what? You commit on a quarterly basis or some period of time. You have, you know, 20% of your income or more tied to quarterly objectives. You don't interact with those project teams day by day.
Right.
So that's sort of your reminder. That's sort of your reminder checklist to get involved. So, yeah, I think money, depending on your, let's call it your distance from the team, mm-hmm. which is sort of what you were alluding to.
Right.
I think money matters. I just don't like it as an incentive. Right?
But in reality, that's why people work.
Yeah, that's. I'm different. We probably have a different view of some of these connectors around monetary reward, just based on where we're at. I don't want to go down that. I don't know if that's a rat hole. That might be a positive hole. But
it's a hole.
Yeah, let's avoid that. But money. I'm not saying money's bad, right? It's a connector. Really, anything that incents a stakeholder to be engaged, I'm fine with.
Right.
I'm a bird of a different color. So
well,
yeah. But again, another
that's another very
another,
deep hole.
Another rat hole. So anyone who cares, the team. I brought up the team. Lateral. So folks, you know, project managers, I think of project managers as being someone who sort of circles a project. So maybe a first level stakeholder, they're sort of hovering.
Yeah, just that image of circling, I just picture buzzards just kind of watching.
That is a good picture. Hopefully they're picking at the bones of the team. Or they're looking for scraps to tidy up and to manage them into a Gantt chart. So there's, you know, first level managers, first level project managers, They would clearly be stakeholders. And then I think of executive sponsors and things. In that traditional, you know, project chartering, that traditional IT view of someone puts a charter together, they put a business case together, and then someone on the executive team signs up to sort of sponsor that and shepherd that through from a leadership point of view. So all of those folks. How about war stories? Do we have any war stories that we could share about? What I think of, there's this notion of patterns and anti-patterns. So maybe we could start the show with, like, what would be a pattern of, and it would drive other discussion, what would be a pattern of a good stakeholder or an anti-pattern of a bad stakeholder? So, you know, bad, poor engagement versus good engagement.
Well, I think it's like a captain of a ship or a head coach of a team that doesn't try and do everything, but makes sure you're pointed in the right direction and works with his, lieutenants or assistant coaches and make sure that everyone has a united plan of attack of the way we're going, but doesn't necessarily meddle in, you're doing this wrong, so here I'm going to come over and save the day. Because that's where I've seen, historically, I've seen the over-engaged stakeholder.
So maybe there's an anti-pattern of the micromanagement. I'm putting words in your mouth, but micromanagement stakeholder.
Yeah.
So someone who overly... So the good news there is they're at least
they care.
They care.
Right.
They strongly care. They're connected to the team. Overly connected. The team looks over their shoulder and there's a head sitting there on their shoulder
exactly.
Right behind them. I guess bad news is they're micromanagement. I have a good story of someone. It just popped into my mind. It was a company I was working at in coaching, Agile coaching, a few years ago. And I was there as a young scrum master. So I entered as a coach, and then I became a...
A few years ago?
A few years ago. Literally, like 2 or 3, 4 years ago.
A young Scrum Master a few years ago?
Well, a new Scrum Master at that company.
Oh.
But a new team... I joined the company, and I was new, so it was my first project as a Scrum Master. That was sort of my entry vehicle. And we were doing an interface to Amazon. It was an e-commerce company. And I remember our VP of Business Development, and she was a wonderful young lady. I didn't know her. I didn't know anyone very well. But what I noticed is she was sort of an executive sponsor for us because it was an international project. We were working on Amazon UK.
Okay.
So we had an Amazon US interface, but we were doing the UK variant. And we were working with some sales folks in the UK, and she had international concerns. But I remember she would, I did my shtick about chickens and pigs and how to be an effective stakeholder in training sessions as part of Agile adoption. And she came into every daily stand-up, and she was like the perfect chicken. I remember I was like, holy crap. One, she's in every stand-up. She would send me a note if she couldn't be in a stand-up. She would send a delegate. She would tell me why. Oh, I'm on a world junket or whatever. She just had this perfect connection of, to me, she was a perfect chicken. She would attend every sprint review. She recognized her role. It was almost, you know, it was just effortless. And it's not effortless for most stakeholders. She had a very driven personality, but she really worked hard to adapt to the role. We had some difficulty working with remote customers. We wanted to actually have some folks in the UK. They dialed in and attended our stand-up. So it wasn't just her. It was the offshore stakeholders, and they adapted to their role beautifully. I think she was coaching them as well. And it just struck me as what was rare about that for me is how effectively and how quickly she just engaged in the role.
Right.
And sort of listened and sort of adapted very well. And the team just loved it. And she was just this quiet, she didn't dive in. It was the team. She really got the fact that it was the team's baby.
Right.
Never interfered whatsoever. Occasionally would pull me aside because we were having issues. Occasionally pull me aside. She's like, Bob, are we having an issue? I remember. And I'm like, yeah, you know, your instincts are pretty darn right. We're having some issues here and there. And she would always, offer some constructive options and things and coaching. What can I do about it? So maybe that's a pattern. That's a pattern story from my point of view.
So thinking through your story, the stuff that set her apart was, A, she cared and she was there. But B, she wasn't, I guess, because I've been micromanaged a lot in my life and been on projects that were micromanaged, that's the thing that I jumped to. So trying to identify the solid stakeholder. that just kind of has a guiding hand, or what do you think her role for the team was? What did she give the team that they really latched onto?
So what she was doing is she was guiding. She was sort of guiding the external. So if she was not there, we were really struggling. We had bit off a lot. So Amazon has, and I'm not picking on Amazon, but they have these sandboxes and things that you interface to via APIs. Well, they're not always up, and the APIs don't always work, and you can't always get someone on the phone to help you. So there's this incessant trial and error aspect to it, to getting connected to their checkout systems and things like that, to test. And it's just, you have to work through it. Well, you know, one day it looks like it's going to be, you know, good, and 2 days or 3 days later, you're not working at all. And it's really an external dependency or something. She was very even, very, very even keeled. She would always be looking at, what can I do? Mm-hmm. And if I can't do something, and she would always ask, what can I, instead of helping. So you ever have the stakeholder that helps without asking? Right. Let me help you. And they have a view of how and where they can help. So what characteristics I'm thinking, her name was Jennifer. I think I safely say that. So Jennifer had this wonderful hand. So she was in the game, absolutely in the game, quietly in the game, but everyone knew it. She was interfacing to the UK folks for us and really keeping them calm. It's like, you know what? It's every day they're going to have wins and they're going to have failures. So you guys have to be calm. You have to give them feedback. She would explain the Agile tenets of high priority first.
Right.
I know she was helping us with that with them so that they understood, hey, we may not get every feature done. And in fact, this project at the end was a rousing success, but we did not deliver every feature at all.
Right.
But we delivered the right features. And I think she helped us overseas to set the right tenor, to get the right feedback so that we were implementing the right thing. So we were making adjustments. We made a lot of adjustments in real time.
So the UK team was your end user, your customers, or how
they were sales folks who were going to be selling it to direct.
Ooh, okay.
They were they were sales folks.
Right.
That says it. No, I was one of my concerns being a new Scrum Master there was I had never opened the kimono. There's a picture first thing in the morning, right? I had never opened up a Scrum team, a daily stand up to chomping at the bit sales folks in a remote site. I didn't know exactly what I like transparency, right? Yeah. So sometimes, you know, practicing what you preach is really hard.
Right.
But it was actually a beautiful move, and I think she played a part in that dance of we really got effective feedback. So they were actually talking to prospective customers and then giving us that feedback. So we sort of narrowed to a solution.
Right.
Over time, we would have never been successful without them being on the daily stand up. And they heard things like, Eureka, we had a great success. So they would applaud us.
Right.
But they also, you know what stand-ups are like. Mm-hmm. They would also hear lots of frustration and fear and uncertainty and doubt. And we're behind and the burn downs are burning up. My God. They would hear that on the phone, but they didn't wig out. So I think Jennifer was a part of that. Very, very softly. Right, but to me that's stakeholder. At the end, applauded who? So who was the first person that sent us a congratulations when we nailed it?
I'm assuming she did.
Jennifer, right, just blew our socks off. Like right there, you guys just knocked it out of the park. And again, wasn't looking at it from a feature rich perspective, but from that customer's point of view.
Right. Okay. So I guess the other side, I've talked a little bit about over engaged stakeholders. The other side is the one that doesn't really.
Care.
Seemingly doesn't care, but they'll tell you they care. But they don't show up to the retrospective. They don't. Well, I guess the retrospective's not necessarily as important. The review, the demo.
Don't you hate stakeholders that don't show up at like sprint reviews?
Yeah, and then what's even worse is when they do show up and they've got all these. It's like, hey, I'm here now, so you listen.
You listen to me?
Yes.
Oh my God! Now. I know. Yeah. Listen now, because it's about me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm gracing you with my presence. Right. So there's an anti. I think we've just backed into an anti pattern, haven't we?
Yeah. So that's a very frustrating thing for the team, because it's like the first thing is, well, you know, it would have been nice to have heard that three sprints ago when we were actually on that feature and we demoed it and you weren't here, and now all of a sudden you have a problem with it. Yeah, so that's a very frustrating thing for a team to deal with, because you really fight very hard to prevent rework in all your transparency and everything you're doing.
Stakeholders aren't doing their job. Flat out, they suck. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, they're not doing. It's like a team that would be throwing out code that's just flat out. They know they're supposed to test it and they don't test it and they throw out crappy code. To me, I have very low tolerance for stakeholders like that. That aren't provide. That's their job to provide that feedback,
right?
And to let a team let their. It's actually let's reframe it. Is it their team? It's their team.
Yeah.
Well, not from an ownership perspective, but I like you know I like the view of liking you know being inclusive, but having a broader team view. So are stakeholders part of the team?
Well, in your broad view, yeah.
How about yours?
No.
So in a, in your mental model, you don't...
I am a hardcore team is the team.
The team is the team guy?
Yeah. And then there's external influencers that we have.
So that sets up like, you know, it sets up like sort of adversarial boundaries.
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, it should be when you have a crappy stakeholder, but a well-engaged and well-behaved stakeholder
should... It's not adversarial.
I know.
Yeah.
But it could end up being,
yeah.
You know, with a team that kind of holds firm to their thoughts and their beliefs and how it should be handled.
You know, so what do you do about these anti stakeholders?
You can't fire them. That's the problem.
You can. You can flatten their tires and wait for them outside of the office or something like that, right? In a mask, in a ninja mask.
Yeah, well, yeah, but then you risk being fired.
That's true. Or put in jail or yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, I guess there's
something even worse.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you have any constructive, how have you, I mean, I think it's our job as coaches, you're a scrum master and as leaders, we have to do something. Do you have any ideas about like techniques of how you've approached it?
I mean, the first thing I would do is sit down and try to make sure they understand the importance of their role and make sure that they know that they're doing something wrong because they might not know. Maybe they didn't pay attention, or maybe they were writing an email while you were giving that overview of what a stakeholder is and how they should behave, you know, because they were off, you know, solving a problem in, you know, West India or something. But I think making sure, kind of giving them a fair opportunity to get back in the game and kind of give them a wake-up call of, okay, this is what the team needs you to do, not this is what I need you to do. This is what the team and the project needs you to do. And you're not doing it, yeah. So how can I help? You know, taking that angle. So that's how I would attack it. Would it work? Maybe not.
I think training. I mean, I think that's a politically correct kind of tact. You know, and I want to ask. I want to put pressure on you and see what you would do if it didn't work.
Right.
But I think the first level. I think training is an effective. You know, the approach and what you're talking about is, hey, you know, I'm not judging you. Do you really know the role? Here, let me explain the role to you.
Right.
Let me help you. Because right. I know you're just making, you know, I know your heart's in the right place, and I know you're not trying to sabotage this right. team, et cetera, right? So let me help you know, you know, what you're doing. I'll pull my ear when you need to, like, get excited. I'll pull my right ear when you need to get excited right. in the sprint review, and I'll pull my left ear when you need to shut up in the sprint review. I'll give you these triggers or something. And I'm kidding. I've actually done that.
I was just going to ask that.
With some people. I've literally knocked the ears so much,
okay.
but had a signal.
Right.
So, and make eye contact in meetings so that you're sort of establishing this rapport with the stakeholder. Because you know what? You think that they should know when to engage and how to right. effectively engage, and they don't, to your point, right? So it's part training and maybe part trigger because they're not intimate with the team.
Right.
As we are, so that we could give them those triggers.
Right, and I think the key is that when they are there, they have to be devoted. They have to put the BlackBerry, the iPhone, the laptop down.
Amen to that. Right, is be engaged in the be engaged.
Right,
I think we started out engaged stakeholders. We started right. out the Metacast with that notion of engagement. There's nothing more frustrating than like what just sitting in and then popping up, watching a screen, and then popping your head up every once in a while. What if it doesn't work? What do you do? Any other options?
You can trade stakeholders. You can put them on the trade market, trade bait. I don't know.
I think you can invite. One idea that comes to mind is that I'm just sort of chatting about it. I don't know. I've sort of done this. So let me give you an example at my current company that we actually had. So Bob Galen did the. I'm trying to have my stories shorten. I'm trying to shorten my stories. You know, it's hard for me.
Yeah.
But I did the training shtick and talked about, you know, Agile and Scrum and the ceremonies and what's important. So sprint reviews. And we started out with sort of a bang with our sprint reviews. And attendance was up. But over time, and we right. have a two-week tempo. So every 2 weeks is the sprint reviews. And over time, attendance was just waning and waning. And this was a cross team. So this was multiple. This was VPs. This was senior leadership was really sort of dropping the ball. And then we had one way we did it is we had a really successful, a critical project that the entire company, forget a stakeholder cared about, but the company cared about. And we had a disastrous start, but we had a monumentally good ending to it. So we had a really tough release, but then we had a really solid release and we fixed things up. But in that sprint review, no one showed up.
In the good one. Yeah.
So here we are kicking butt, right? We're literally kicking ass. We have this wonderful sprint review, and just a couple sales, low-level sales folks show up. And things were outstanding. I mean, the team was doing outstanding work,
right.
And there was no one to show it to. And we brought that up in our, we have a senior leadership team or an executive meeting, and I brought that up, and I'm like, you know, it was a shame everyone has this outstanding sprint review. And, you know, I wonder if we could do a better job in the future. Like, you know, the team was really kind of left, you know, they were happy, but, you know, it's like,
right.
You know, it really left a bad taste in their mouth. So the CEO kind of aligned with that. So he became a meta stakeholder, and he was like, exactly, the metacast, the meta stakeholder. And he said, you know, he just flat out got to the bottom line and said, you know what, we're dropping the ball.
So shame.
Shame. Well, not shame, leadership. Shame.
Right.
But leadership. It was, and shame. Yeah, no, I'm coming back. Yes. Shame. It's disappointment.
Right.
It's like, we can do better than that leadership. Just like we would handle that at the team level.
Right, yeah.
And actually, you know what? We've had outstanding, and it's sort of a call to arms, and we've had outstanding. We actually reran that sprint review, and we had every stakeholder in the company there. And I don't think that was out of fear. That was called, we did the wrong damn thing. This was a critical project that didn't
well.
And so we've actually had an increase after that, a nice increase, and I don't expect it to go away, of attendance, of engagement at those things.
Okay, so here's another question. So in thinking through, if I have a disengaged stakeholder, I'd almost rather them stay disengaged.
No.
Just
all right, I'll
bear,
shut up. All right, I'll try. All right, I'll zip my lip.
And I say that rather than the part-time. So, hey, I'm here. Listen, you got to do this. You got to jump through the roof to undo everything that you've done. I'd almost have a lower level stakeholder come in and start running the show.
Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's another workaround from my point of view, or even a higher level or a parallel level.
Yeah. Right.
Another stakeholder. So I think you're right. I'm sorry for jumping down your throat there. Right. But you know what it is. I don't want to miss. You need that level of engagement.
Yeah. I think
that's one of the determinants. That's one of the foundational things. Is agile teams, I don't think they can deliver without one. Right, without an engaged stakeholder. So as coaches, it's really tough to be successful without an engaged stakeholder.
I don't know about that.
Oh, yes, debate.
Yeah.
Cool.
I.
So you think an agile, you think an agile team? So let's remove them. Without a stakeholder entirely, that they can be successful.
Do you consider the product owner a stakeholder?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Then, I was pulling the product owner in as a part of the team, as a unit of this is what we're going to do. So
what I'm saying is really the translator to business value. If you call a stakeholder someone who cares, someone who's engaged, but they're that sort of that translation unit between the organization and what the team is doing. The product owner does play that. They're not the only one, though. But the product owner, depending on who they are and the organizational structure, I think they can do that. But where were you going?
I just felt that what you need is a good product owner that can align you with the business and the project and make sure that you're working on the appropriate things at the appropriate time, the appropriate way. I don't think that you necessarily will fail if you don't have the VP nodding in the demos or reviews or whatever you want to call them.
It depends on the shop, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in your shop, you know, I think you have a really strong sort of meta product owner or VP in your area. I'm not picking on that person, but let's say they didn't attend 5 sprint reviews.
Oh, but things have changed.
Okay.
As his role has expanded, he's been unable
to attend.
So
has he delegated to other?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we have a kind of a lead product owner and a manager of product owners that stepped into that role. That's really, and that's really helped, because the thing that that's really given is that's given some extra credibility and weight to that person's say, right? So now we have a single point of contact.
Absolutely.
Okay, we go to this person and she's going to make sure we're going in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Right, so that has helped us tremendously in having a single voice. Now, she certainly works with her boss who has a hand in it.
Yep.
But she is our single voice of this is who we go
to. But that's
to.
That delegation and someone who's more engaged. I mean, that's what we were talking about. And I think it's situational. Our CEO right now in the company I'm with, and we love him. He's entrepreneurial. He's young. He grew the company. I mean, he started the company at like 19 or something like that. He's got all these wonderful strengths. But one of the things that he does that's challenging is he'll come into a sprint review and he'll sort of share his opinion. And sometimes it's like it catches the team from left field.
Right.
And it catches the product owners from left field. So there's a case where we want to actually engage him almost in every sprint review in those areas of the product that we know he has a natural affinity to. And if he wasn't, that would be a problem for us.
Right.
Because he's such an influential stakeholder, right? It's not, he doesn't try to undermine the POs directly. His heart's in the right place. Right. But again, he's the founder. He's the inspirational leader. He's sort of got his hand still around the pulse of the market that we're trying to hit. So again, I think it's situational. Now, so do we want to run around him? I think it would be really bad for us to run like two releases in a row. So, you know, multiple sprints without having his input at all. We would do ourselves a disservice. We would do the teams a disservice because we wouldn't have that checkpoint.
So in an effort to dissuade that behavior, would the right thing be to have him funnel that feedback through the product owners?
Absolutely. But it's really hard to...
Right.
It's really hard to coach the CEO.
I understand completely. But in an ideal world, then if you could, that's kind of how you would solve that.
And in fact, we try to coach him in a constructive way. Another thing he does sometimes is he waits. We do a fist of five. So at the end of every sprint review, we sort of grade this. You know, what was the community's reaction to what the team just did?
Right.
He waits his voting not on what they delivered, but what he thinks they should have delivered. So we're even trying to coach him away from that. It's like how can they meet your mental model if you've never shared your mental model?
Yeah.
That's not a fair fist of five.
Right. And how did that come out? How did that come out? It was like, why are you rating them a two when everybody else says a five?
We don't call it... Well, piece of advice for you, Josh. You don't call them out in the middle of a sprint.
I'm not suggesting that's what happened. But, I mean, at some point, you have to understand his angle, right?
Yeah.
So you have to ask that question.
Well, and we've done that behind the scenes, and it's like, he's projecting forward. Well, no. Again, you know, coming back to your point, training. It's like, no, that fist of five is not for the future. That fist of five is for the now.
Right.
So how did the team do now? Grade it, right? Not grade, but in a constructive sense.
Right.
And he's made that adjustment.
Okay.
But again, it's the training. I think it's an evolutionary path for stakeholder engagement. The good news with him is that his heart's in the right place, and he really cares. I mean,
right.
It goes back to the point. He cares a lot about this stuff. Going back to the meta decision he made, he's like, he kick-butted a leadership team level and insisted that folks do a better job of engagement.
Right.
Where else do we want to go? Have we beat this one to death?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I don't know what else to talk about. Do you have anything else?
Well, I'm trying. I feel like, I wonder if there's something.
I mean, this is your topic. This is something that I think in like Metacast 1, you said, we gotta talk about that. And you even pounded the table like that.
I did pound it.
You did? But
because it's such a challenge. I mean, I think there's a lot of... My passion is around the laziness, so I encounter so many stakeholders that come in. And
my passion is the opposite.
What?
The over-engaged.
Really?
Yeah, hey, back off, we got it.
My passion is the... I've encountered, and I guess...
I've encountered the opposite.
I've encountered folks that just don't care. And it's like you have to sort of send them an engraved invitation to get them in there.
Right.
And you really need their feedback. The other thing, I think you touched on this earlier, we just had a major release not that long ago. And what we do is we come in early in the morning. You probably have talked about this right. to you privately, but we come in at like 2 a.m., so we do a Saturday release. We're a software-as-a-service product provider, and so you have to do it off hours. So everyone schleps in at 2 a.m., everyone's exhausted, and it takes...
Do you have donuts?
You have to food the thing that we're not lacking. You clearly know this is food. You have to feed them.
Yes.
Otherwise they won't. And masses of coffee. So yeah. mass containers of coffee and mass quantities of food. Even then that just breaks it even.
Right, yeah.
Right. It's early on a Saturday morning. But we do a push, and then we do some testing of in production, pre-production, and in production of what we just pushed. Mm-hmm. And it's when we feel like, hey, you know, we've not regressed anything, and what we've delivered working, then we'll turn the site back on. So our support group, we were doing some internal tools, and the day of the release, when we were demonstrating the tools, they were like, oh, that's not what I wanted. Oh, that's not what I wanted. And I love them. So if they ever listen to the Metacast, you have all of my love. but it was
it's
like
just bad behavior. That's all.
It was, and it was just even the teams. It was like, holy, we were, you know how transparent I love right. to have teams. We were transparent. We did reviews. We listened. We had private demo sessions. Blah blah. And on the day of the release, so it's that. So it's not just an engaged stakeholder. It's what I don't even know what they were doing. It's like, did they prop their eyes open during the demos with toothpicks?
Well, then they weren't engaged.
They weren't engaged.
I mean, that's the...
So engaged, I guess what I'm poking at, it's not just the time commitment, but you are vibrantly and violently, connected to the project. You right. know what's going on. If you have an opinion, it is just absolutely bad form to what? I think in this case, they actually had that opinion. But
they didn't say anything?
They didn't say anything.
Yeah.
So
but again, you know, coming from my angle, that's a slippery slope of violently engaged and all that stuff, if that can go overboard, right? So,
this is so interesting because, you know what, I've never... You and I can't even, like, imagine your world then. Because my world, in all seriousness, like 80% of the teams that I've ever coached, it's like the stakeholders are out playing golf. Or something. You have to like put the red carpet out. You have to, you know, put petals in front of them. To
no,
get them.
I am like a hockey goalie, just with a barrage of slap shots coming from the blue line, trying to deflect everything that's coming from the team and say, "Hey, we got it. You know, this is all I need you to do. Just show up here. We need your feedback. I'm not saying we don't want it, but let's temper it. Let's give it at the right time.
I've occasionally had that.
Oh man!
But I mean, have you occasionally had the disconnected?
A couple. But the majority is on
like
the
90-10 or 80-20 or something.
Yeah.
Wow! See, I'm exactly. It's like, what do I have to do?
I think we would each welcome each other's.
I think so. Yeah. Or even the lessons. I think it would be interesting to see how we both handled, even with the tools and techniques side, like how we handled the opposite or something like that.
Well, that's why we're here, right?
Well, not just here. I wrote that product owner book. I think so. When I wrote that product owner book, I was skewed towards the how do you pull. So the most of my content was how do you fish for stakeholders, right? How do you net them? How do you hook them in and bring them in? I didn't have the how do you beat them away with a stick.
Yeah, no, this is you threw dynamite in the water and the fish are falling from the sky now.
See, I didn't bring any of that perspective into the book. So I'm thinking maybe I want to do a revision of that book. And I'm thinking to myself, I ought to get some lessons from you or some stories from you because
right.
I didn't have the dynamite. I love that analogy.
Yeah.
I wish I could draw that. I should have one drawing in the book, which is the fish dying from the dynamite or something. I can see both. I can see both sides. I don't know which is. I wonder if one is harder than the other. I think they're probably both hard to deal with because there's all of the political. It's very situational. I think we maybe stop the Metacast with this is really hard stuff. I think
right.
So. Stakeholder engagement. One of the reasons I beat the table is it's a slippery slope. Right. You alluded to that. It's not always going to be stay maintained. So I think it can go away.
Right.
Right. It can oscillate. It depends on the stakeholders.
Yeah. So I guess as tips for those that are out there, you know, saying, hey, you're going to talk about this, but you're not helping me out. So I guess the first tactic would be to make sure they understand their role, because they might not. So sit down and have that talk and say, this is what the team needs, and frame it as the team. This is what the team and the project needs to be successful, and walk them through that. And then if that doesn't work.
So that's one thing.
Right.
I think another thing from my side is make the reviews, make the transparency a big deal. So do a little marketing. Okay. Make sure the stakeholders, could you buy that?
Right, yeah.
Make sure the stakeholders know, hey, this is a big one. You know, so this is a media, you know, you might be able to miss this next sprint. But you know what, the third sprint.
You see, I don't buy into that. To me, it's a consistency thing.
But it is a consistency thing. I'm not arguing with you from that point. Where I am, I love to argue with you. See, I'm making these choices of how much do I want to stretch right here. Do I want to really, you know, aggravate this man?
How much coffee have you had?
Yeah, I'm warming up. But I think consistency is important. But you know what? Not every sprint review is exactly has the same weight.
No.
And so I think it's make sure that you get them at everyone. But then make sure that you get them at the most crucial ones. It goes back to that one I had, that example I had earlier,
right,
where they missed a crucial one. I mean, actually, shame on the Scrum Master and shame on the product owner for not. I mean, one thing at your disposal is cancel that meeting, right? We can cancel if we don't have a quorum. So another tool or technique, and this is on the Bob side. This is on the if they're not coming, what do I do?
Right,
cancel it. I cancel due to disinterest, right? In all seriousness,
right.
Now that might be politically somewhat incorrect, but it's the truth, and it might draw attention,
right?
And I think it's the congruent thing to do.
Right.
So PR a lot, make sure folks know what's coming attractions.
Nice.
Adapt your ceremonies. We do a fist of five at the end, and then we talk about, hey, what would it take to get you to be a four or five?
Okay.
So what adjustments would we make in this sprint review? Make it more about working. Some teams talk about PowerPoints more than working software.
Right.
So make sure it's the compelling working software side that teams can make adjustments. What other tools? What about for your on your side, tools and techniques to run interference?
Well, I mean, I think, coming from the review, you want them there, and then trying to funnel them through the point of contact for the team of trying to sit down and say, can we not barrage the team with feedback from 50 different places? Let's work it through a single point of contact that can handle the priorities and knows the right things. And then, of course, you have to fight them off from trying to do that person's job, right? So that's the next battle you have. So,
could you do previews? A thought comes to mind that maybe do a preview with them, like private previews, you know, and get their feedback. That actually might not be a bad way.
Right.
Because you know, there's this like fire hose feedback mechanism, but all of that feedback, I mean, again, in Agile, we want all of that feedback. Right,
exactly. I'm not saying it's
we
bad.
Don't want it, you know, we want it in a forum where we can handle it and digest it.
Exactly. Doesn't,
yeah, so maybe like a preview. Sort of forum. We've actually done that for different reasons.
Right, and the biggest thing is that the team has worked with the product owner and they feel like they've done a really good job meeting everything that they've been asked to deliver. And then this over-engaged stakeholder comes out of left field and says, no, that's wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And then the product owner's like, wait a minute, that's not what I thought, and I sat down with you, and we discussed this, and you're coming, and you're changing everything, and this is what I had the team working on.
So maybe there's another technique there. Is some of that's I'm not blaming the product owner, but part of that is their role, even if it's tough, right? Isn't that like?
Yeah, it is. But then there's times. That? Yeah, but there's also times when maybe they don't. Maybe they're. I'm not saying the product owners haven't tried. It's just it's a tough battle.
Right. But again, one of the techniques for the Medicaid is maybe put some pressure on the product owner to step up a little more. They may not be capable. They actually, you used a point earlier that there's a hierarchy where you're at now. So there's a management team. So it's not just one product owner. There's an organizational aspect of product owner. So escalate it. It's like we're getting creamed by commentary. And I'm, in a constructive way, is someone, well, that's a problem. So I think one tool is to hold the product owners more accountable to try to do something about that. It's sort of their job, not in a vacuum, but they could escalate it up their chain. They could do preview meetings. They could try signatures on things,
right?
To try to control that that staccato feedback that derails things. How do we wrap this? I think engagement. So what do you want? So why don't we, with a question, what's the, define your perfect model for stakeholder engagement. I mean, do you want them loose? Do you want them tight? Try to put some words around that, and I'll do the same thing.
The reflexive thing, given my history, is a looser, but I don't want them disengaged, right? So I certainly need a strong product owner, because that's how I feel the team is going to succeed. But I do like a loosely engaged upper-level stakeholder that makes sure that our project remains strategic and keeps us delivering stuff that's going to make us better overall. Because the product owner is a little bit more fine-grained, right? So this is what we need to do to get this out. But I do like someone that is helping steer the ship, and very loosely. So it's not, you know, they're up there, they're on the wheel, they're spinning it a thousand ways to the right, but they're just making little changes.
It's a strategic advisor.
Yeah.
And connecting it. Did you remember that silly story of Jennifer I talked about?
Right.
Did she fit that bill?
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to...
Is she available for hire?
She has since moved on from that position. She was our best stakeholder there.
Right.
I don't know if I ever even told her that. So this is a reminder for me that I need to probably reach out and tell her how good she was, and to say thank you, even though she's moved on. I think you and I, it's weird with us. We come back full circle sometimes. I agree with that. I think Jennifer, plus or minus, is the stakeholder I was looking for.
Right.
Someone who is engaged at the right level. And maybe that's the net of the story.
Right, and that's the hard part, is how do you define the right level? Right?
Well, so we did. We said strategic. We said allowing the team, giving them space to breathe, to grow, and room. And to fail. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Fail. But giving them space, but guiding them, kind
right.
of keeping them going in the right direction, and letting everyone know what that direction is. And even being an advocate for the team.
Mm-hmm.
That upper level, right? Get off their back. I feel like they're working hard. I feel like they're on the right track.
Right.
Right. Give them some space.
Cool.
So we sort of came back to that Jennifer model. I think that is the right model.
Cool.
Well, Metacasters, we've sort of, again, if you've hung in there with us, hopefully you have, we've beaten another topic somewhat to death. I think we've hit some really important topics on the Metacast, I think, so far. We've talked about trust. We've talked about, today we were talking about stakeholder engagement. We try to keep, you know, sort of to Josh and I, you know, what we think are like crucial conversations around things. But we're open to all kinds of ideas. You always hear us talking about, you know, an open-ended request at the end of a Metacast for questions or for topics for us to chat about. So we'd love to hear from you. Josh, are we signing off? I think we're signing off.
We are. Just quick reminders, we are at meta-cast.com and on Twitter, meta-cast, that's all one word, spelling out hyphen, because Twitter doesn't like non-alphanumeric characters. So you can reach us any of those ways to send us topic requests, questions, or anything that you'd like to hear. And I guess that's it, right?
So from beautiful downtown Cary, North Carolina, yeah. North of Fuquay.
Yes.
And we don't know where we'll end up the next time. We could be in Hawaii, actually. I would love a Hawaii Metacast.
Yeah, I've never been there.
Yeah, we should, a road trip. We can do
Let's book it.
So shake
and bake.
We're out of here. Take care, everyone.